Good morning. I need to apologize before I even start. I got sick back in November. Anybody with me? And I'm still coughing. So if you saw me at the front, I ate two hulls as I was starting out, and we'll see how it goes. It's really nice. I have a lot of connections here as well. My daughter actually attended McMaster. She was part of your, is it Wombaland? Is that the right terminology? Many years ago. So my name's Brett. I come from Ajax. It was a wonderful drive to get here today. If it was during the week, I would not be able to say that. I've been speaking for 28 years. The first nine of that, I was a teacher. The last three, I've been a psychotherapist as well. So I'm kind of figuring out what those two things look like. And you heard the range of things I speak on. I will just say mental health is one of my largest talks. It's also why I'm sitting. I had a breakdown 13 years ago. I was speaking 300 speaking dates a year to pay for a master's degree in Chicago while being married with two kids. Just not good. Anyways, I had a breakdown, didn't leave my house for 5 months, didn't work for a year, and 13 years later, I am still unwell. It's interesting as a speaker who speaks on mental health and a psychotherapist who struggles with anxiety every day of their life. It's just offered, I've learned for me, someone called me the sitting speaker recently, and I'm like, that's fair. I don't sleep. This is my Oura Ring. Each night, it tells me how much deep sleep I get. Last night was 8 minutes. It's supposed to be 90, and my body then responds with anxiety, and I begin another day. Anyways, that's why I'm sitting. Another topic for another day. There is a futurist. His name's Alvin Tolfsen, and Alvin says this, "The illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who can't read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn." I do think we need an incredible unlearning on mental health, I would say for sure, but especially in this discussion on media today. Oh, I forgot to mention, I'm married with two kids. This is the only picture you will ever see of me in a suit, and I was at a wedding just down the road. This is my wife, Dawn. She's a pediatric home care case manager. My daughter, Zoe, who she did 2 years Western, 2 years Mac, and is now up at Lakehead in law school. And my son, Ben, did 4 years at Queens, and he's currently working on a master's in psychotherapy. But our favorite family member is not us, it's Phoebe. Phoebe is our English bulldog, and she's the best part of all of our days. So I have a short period of time. Here's the morning. I'm going to look at some statistics. We're going to look at social media. I'm going to do one slide with video games, music, and streaming, some conclusions, some resources, and we're done. And when I say we're done, I hope we're not. I mean, a sermon series like this is really meant to be a catalyst for you to take back into your homes, your families, your church, your small groups, and anywhere else. I will kind of say just a few things of why this topic matters to the church. Number one, because tech is forming identity, values, habits, and desires. Someone is discipling your congregation every day, and it might not be Jesus. So this is actually a discipleship issue. Side note, take as many pictures as you want of any slides that you want. That's all good. Number two, because our attention is being hijacked. Spiritual growth requires focus and silence and reflection and presence, and tech too often forms the opposite. Number three, because our social media is shaping our identity. We're defining ourselves through likes and comparisons and curated images and online affirmations. And a few more, because it impacts everything. So this is a pastoral care concern, because it's reshaping families. You know, we as the church must help families steward technology well. Because we're called to be wise and not passive, Romans 12:2 warns us not to be conformed by the world. Because tech can be used for kingdom purposes. So this is not an anti-tech message, it's a wisdom message. And I might just say, most people drift into unhealthy tech habits without even realizing it. So people have called me a fire hose before. I know there's a lot. So you don't have to click these, but I have three things for this talk. One is I have a Google Doc. And on the Google Doc are all the things I will be talking about. Now, if you just go to my website, which is the far right one, that panel, right now it's a coffee, three things over, it moves over, it will be the Google Doc. The Amazon shop, at the very top of my website are all my social media platforms. In the middle, you'll see that little Amazon A, and that is every book that I suggest that you might read on these topics as well. So just some quick thoughts. Number one, we're not going back. I'm at a talk recently and I said, you know, we're not putting the genie back in the bottle. And at the end, a woman got very mad at me. She said, Brett, we're Christians, we don't believe in genies. And I'm like, you're really missing my point. I didn't have any theology of genies at that point, but we're not going back. I'm 54. If you're around my age, we remember no technology and then kind of technology. Number two is this kind of tension. We can't have our heads in the sand and just say everything's fine. I love tech. I'm an early adopter, but everything is just not okay. But the other side of it is just this hatred or fear of technology. We use the term Luddite sometimes. But I will say this, we can do this. We can, there's success. This is not a fear-based discussion, but I think we can do better. Some kind of larger thoughts, how we engage with technology affects everything. It affects our body, our mind, our soul, and often one we don't think about is our Christian witness. I've been at the same health club for a long time, and I'm there one day, and a guy I work out with once in a blue moon walks up to me very, very quickly. He's angry, and he kind of motors over to me, and he looks me in the face, and he says, I want to tell you something, and I'm like, oh, not a Christian guy, side note. And he goes, I will never set foot in church for the rest of my life because of you people. I don't like you people. I said, tall people? I thought it was hilarious. And he looks at me and goes, no, you Christians. And I'm like, what's going on? He said, I'm online last night. Why are the only people creating fights and posting stuff they shouldn't online the Christians that I follow online? And I took a big breath and I felt sad. I'm kind of like, oh, you think that's Jesus? We forget what you click like on goes not just to your friends, but the friends of your friends' friends. Like it spirals out the things that we do. And I do think if we have a Christian biblical worldview, that should affect our values and that in turn should affect our actions. And we could speak all morning on just the stewardship of our lives. What do we do with our time, what we look at, listen to, and all of these other things? Jill Manning once said, the arrival of the smartphone radically changed every aspect of, and let's change teenagers to everyone, from our social interactions to our mental health. Now, usually we're like, here's what's bad. As a 54-year-old, anybody remember media talks back in the day? Like it was kind of like, everything's bad. Music, video games, don't do any of them. That is not today. Let's do the opposite. What is good? My favorite thing about tech? Music. I had thousands of albums and CDs. I even have 2 8-tracks. I love music, but now I just click on Apple Music. And whether it's Apple Music or Spotify, 52 million songs are mine. I just say to my Alexa, Alexa, play any song in human history, and there it goes. Podcasts on the way here today, the best teaching, learning, authors, everything in the world is right there for us. Social media, I posted this morning, setting up at your church, and my prayer team, which is around 800 people all over the planet, will pray for you as a congregation and me as a family for the upcoming week. Maps, anybody remember actual physical maps? If you were going somewhere, you'd get a triptych from CAA. It was a booklet, and you would go like here to Niagara Falls, turn the page. And today I'm driving here. I just go between Google Maps and Waze and, you know, get off the highway, do the express lanes. It's just wonderful. Communication. A couple summers ago, my daughter's working at the Banff Fairmont Springs Hotel. My son is up at Camp Minioe. He's junior camp director. My wife is somewhere, and I'm somewhere traveling in the country, and all four of us are on a FaceTime. And I get a little teary because it is awesome that I can just connect in that way with my family. And video games, like I remember when Pong came out, I mean the ball going back and forth, and I turned to my buddy and said, we've arrived. Nothing will ever get better. Like look, there's the shading on the ball as it goes across. And today we live in a world where hundreds and hundreds of people spend years and years making games. But my worry is now we only have adventures online and we've stopped having adventures offline. And when I say YouTube is all knowledge, I'm not calling it omnipotent, but it knows a lot. I'm installing a dishwasher recently and I get stuck. And so I go on YouTube, type my model in, and some guy's like, you stuck? And I'm like, yes, I'm literally talking back to my laptop. And he goes, here's what to do. And it was just amazing. And many of us remember when TV was Thursday night at 9 o'clock. If you weren't there, you missed it. And you never knew when you could ever see it again. And today we just turn on any streaming service and it's all there. But statistics worry me. We spend between 7 and 14 hours a day on screens. This is a massive amount of time we spend on screens. But I would say whenever we talk about screen time, we have to say this, not all screen time is equal. Because it's not. If you're in school today, or like I'm writing a new book, I spend a lot of time online. Some of you work online. And reading a book, like if I'm on my iPad, on my Kindle app and reading, well that's reading, it's different than playing a game. And creating a YouTube video is different than watching. One is active, one is passive. And smartphone use, and this is actual research. The day we get a smartphone, it negatively impacts a bunch of things and it increases daytime sleepiness and decreased sleep quality. I have 240 peer-reviewed research studies. I was gonna put them all up and I'm like, do you really need 5 pages of research studies of names you've never seen before? But I think a better one is to just say, what do you see? And I'm not gonna walk through all these, but what do you see? And I encourage you to look, just look around in the upcoming months. I live in Ajax, and my wife and I walk by the water quite a lot, and we'll see parents with a stroller, with a phone in the coffee cup playing. Like, you do not need a counseling degree to realize that kid's in trouble. We touch our phones almost all day long. We open them every 7 minutes. Most of you, your phone is not without your arm's reach ever. The new thing I'm hearing people say is they buy these pop sockets and stick it in the shower, and they can stick it on the wall as they're in the shower. And people are just on their phones everywhere. I'm in the sauna the other day, and there's a guy beside me scrolling through reels. By the way, no headphones. Can we also just stop the noise? Is what you're currently doing helping support the life you're working towards? It's a great thought with tech. If it is, wonderful. But I would put forth we're not bringing the best versions of ourselves into life, relationships, faith, work, school, or anything else. And whatever you're not changing, you are actually choosing. And it also brings up a question of what are we working towards? So I created a version of this talk about a year and a bit ago, and then I changed it again because everything's just shifting and changing, and I kind of look at it a new way now. I want to look at 8 categories for social media. Now, social media, I have lots of research as well. The day we get it, it decreases well-being, and it increases depression and anxiety. And as someone who struggles with anxiety, if I threw my phone away today, my anxiety will not go away. Anxiety is a multifaceted conversation. It's not as simple as just tech or no tech. And if you're like, what are you talking about by social media? This. And you know how old you are if you have to turn to the person beside you and ask, what is that logo? Facebook, 3.7, 3.8 billion users, and if you read it like a book, all the way down to Discord, 220 million users. I underlined 3 because WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, and Snapchat, people are like, well, that's communication tools, but if we're defining social media as sharing or exchanging information, it's kind of part of this. So I want to look at 8 things. These are going to go by very, very quickly. Number 1, comparison. Galatians 1:10, am I now seeking the approval of man or of God? Look through your feed. You are not eating right. You need to improve your body, gain weight, lose weight, go harder at the gym, get a better phone. Your car's not right. Doesn't matter what age you are, it will be appropriate to you. I log in and there's guys my age and my shoulders don't look like them. And my chest is like, everything is not okay. I have to improve. I said to my daughter, what do you think about the comparison game online? And she said, well, even when you love your life, it's tough not to compare. It does disproportionately affect young women. That's another entire conversation there. If anyone's ever read the book, The Anxious Generation by Jonathan Haidt, anybody read that, by the way? A couple people. Really good book, little on the fear side, but based on peer-reviewed research, which just makes it scary. There's a blog that Jonathan and Freya India have. It's actually a Substack. If you don't know Substack, these are long-form blogs. Constantly comparing our beauty, success, lifestyle, and popularity to infinite streams of other people make us feel anxious and inadequate. And almost half of, and it says adolescents, I would say all of us, say that social media makes us feel worse about our bodies. So what's the remedy? The remedy, number 1, is friendships. Research is very clear. The greater quality friendships you have, the less comparison will ever affect you. Do you know what we have to offer as one of the things as the church? People. I love this morning just standing out and watching people come in and hug and handshake and discuss and talk. There's something highly protective. Limiting exposure, and part of this is just awareness. Use the screen time app on your iPhone. If you're an Android person, I believe it's called digital well-being. And gratitude. I'm a therapist. Every client I see has to play the 3 good things game every day. What are 3 things you're thankful to God for today? The Bible is filled with gratitude. And the more you talk about that, the less the other things will affect you. Number 2 is misinformation. There's also one called disinformation. Now, misinformation is just wrong. Disinformation is wrong on purpose. Now, you might have bought into some of these things. I see this quite often as my social media feeds are filled with things that my friends are sharing. If you shared about a year ago Justin Bieber's new song, Holy Jesus, it wasn't true. It actually says right in the line of the YouTube video, this is an AI experiment, and it was actually not Justin's voice, but it was his videos. 2 springs ago, if I'm correct, was the eclipse. If you shared the last eclipse, looked like a cross. It wasn't true. It's interesting how quickly we just click share and off it goes. Many people have the ability to post. Not everyone has the right or the authority to post. My worry these days, as many of us have, is people, not just young people, diagnosing themselves with mental illnesses, pathology, through social media. I'm at a talk, 16-year-old girl walks up and she says, so I have bipolar. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, that's big. I said, where'd you get diagnosed? She goes, well, a couple of years ago, I'm on YouTube and I saw a video and in my head, I'm like, uh-oh. She said, the video said, if you're happy sometimes and sad others, you have bipolar. And I'm like, or you're human. Because that's all of us, probably some of you even today. And she had been living a life as someone with bipolar for 2 years and it wasn't true. We do live in, and it's good to understand language, an echo chamber. This is when you're only exposed to viewpoints that reinforce what you already believe. And what is that? It is every algorithm online. When I log in and scroll through things, everything agrees with me because what I look at and watch will give me more of those things. What I swipe past won't. And this is where we have to work very hard to actually listen to, you know, voices that might be a bit different. I like this. I didn't make it, but you know, before you share, think, is it true? If you don't know, don't share it. Is it helpful, inspiring, necessary, kind? Does this not sound like Philippians 4 through 8? Whatever is true, honorable, just, pure. Mary Jo Sharp once said, irresponsibility with information unravels the impact of a Christian's witness to those in their community and with social media to the broader world. Remedy? Media awareness. This is where I love like a sermon series like this, discussions that we have on this at school and at home, avoiding confirmation bias, following diverse accounts, engaging in dialogue. By the way, never online. No one's ever been in a Facebook post or a comment section on Instagram and people are arguing and said, oh, I see your point. I've changed my point of view. Like no one does that. But go for coffee with people. And lastly, just have some self-reflection. Number three, and this one worries a lot of us, are decreased attention spans. Anybody find it hard to pay attention in church anymore? Work, school, how about watching full-length movies? A friend of mine was going to come and watch Avatar, not the new one, the last one, Avatar 2. This was a couple years ago, and he said, well, I can't watch movies that long anymore. And I'm like, you can't watch movies that long because you don't like them that long, or you can't watch movies that long anymore? And he said, oh, anymore. Everything is now reels. This is all social media. And we do about 8 seconds a reel. Some of us watch hundreds, if not thousands, a day. And if we're going to do that, how hard is it to sit down and watch a movie? Or the last one, read a book. Almost 60% of North Americans read zero books that year. Why? Because people say books are boring. Because you need to sit, open, read, line. There's no swipe. Like, it is literally line by line. Like, I love the Psalm 46, be still and know that I am God. As a side note, if anyone struggles just with stress or anxiety, reading for 6 minutes decreases your stress by 68%. Just tell your Siri to set you a timer for 6 minutes and read multiple times a day. John Mark Comer says, I want to be fully present to the moment. To God, other people, work in the world, and my own soul. And that's more than enough to consume my attention. So the remedy? Screen-free times. And parents, those of us with kids in the home, this is what we model for our children. You cannot tell your kids, get off Instagram as you've had the TV on for 5 hours, your laptop's out, your phone's propped up beside. Like, we have to model good use of technology. And I think we need to re-socialize ourselves to read books. Read 3 pages a day. 3 pages a day is 3 books a year. Cyberbullying. This one's big. Charles Blow, American journalist, once said, one doesn't have to operate with great malice to do great harm. The absence of empathy and understanding are sufficient. As faith-based people, if I was to take your phone, how do you speak to each other online? What do you post? What do we say? I mean, 1 Peter, have unity in mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. I was trying to figure out how I talk about bullying, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go to my YouTube channel, and let's just go through some of the things people say to me. So here's a bunch. Number one, you're not 6'6". Who are you? You've never seen me before. The Waffle House has found its new host. Now, this one, I just assume the Waffle House is like a diner, and I guess I'm the host of the diner, and there's something negative. I'm speaking last year. 18-year-old walks up and says, you know what that is, right? I'm like, I have no idea. Instagram influencer challenged all of his followers, millions of them, to spam that with no context. I'm on Global News the other day and I see it. It's just, it's the person actually pulled this offline, but people are still doing it. I don't trust your haircut. You're a stupid man. You're old and ugly. Who are you to talk about mental health? Now, I hate your shirt. That was fair. It was a big flowery shirt. I like flowery shirts sometimes. But I get quite often, you're not a Christian. I believe if you need medications for mental health, it's okay. I think we too quickly head that pathway, but it's okay. I have some views on parenting and other things, and people write and say, you're not a Christian. And I kind of want to push back and say, yeah, I don't even know if you know the basic tenets of Christian faith. It's not like we believe in the Trinity, the resurrection, and meds or no meds, or like, those are like way down the list. But here's what I see these days. People say, well, if you don't believe in these things, how could you ever believe in those things? And I think bullying has really changed. It used to be when I was a kid, the safest place I had was being at home, being on my street with my friends and my community. And now the worst place to be is at home in your bedroom with the door closed. We say it's Augustine. We don't actually know. One of my favorite lines, the things we agree on, unity, and the things we disagree on, liberty, but in all things, love. And Eugene Cho once said, be careful not to dehumanize people you disagree with. In our own self-righteousness, we can easily become the very things we dislike in others. Now, we could open up a huge discussion here on sextortion, which is just really bad bullying. Sextortion, if you don't know, is when people, especially students, send a sext, like a half-naked, naked photo, but then they find out the person actually isn't another. I mean, first, there's a biblical Christian sexual ethic discussion there, but that person's actually often organized crime. And then they say, if you don't give me money or more videos, I'm going to tell everyone you know. And people are now, I mean, this is something parents, we want our kids running to us, not from us. And we have to work at that. So cyberbullying's big. Strengthen our digital literacy, build support systems, and make sure we set boundaries. One that our students won't really care about, but it's very important, is privacy issues. I don't know if all of us realize, but the entire internet is mirrored, ongoing. I went to the Wayback Machine, the web.archive.org, and I typed in my name. This is my website from 2003, and it's live. And I can click tour dates and see where I'm speaking. I don't own this. I'm six renditions past this. This is on a server somewhere. I'm speaking at an event, and a friend of mine comes up. Her job is a headhunter, you know, kind of like someone who looks for work for you in Toronto. And I said, do you, when someone applies for work, do you like Google them? And she's like, oh, we would never do that. And I'm like, I thought you did. And she goes, we have a company that does it for us. And I kind of laughed, but I'm like, that's interesting how things can be brought back from many, many years ago. So privacy issues, right? Avoid sharing sensitive information, guarding our reputations, and this is where privacy settings matter. And a lot of this is us modeling this for our kids. Now, we use language that I would encourage us not to. People say, well, they're addicted to social media. Currently, as a therapist, there isn't a social media addiction, but I get what you're saying. You're saying it's now affecting your life. Carrie Oberbrunner, many, many years ago, said this, humanity is addicted to silencing the emptiness with whatever means available. I often would put use of social media under a larger umbrella of self-harm, hurting ourselves to get beyond overwhelming feelings, thoughts, and emotions. Something happens. If you're a student, you break up with a boyfriend, girlfriend, you're struggling in a class, parents don't know what to do, adults could be whatever. There's something frustrating, but as opposed to dealing with it head-on, we push it down and just try to get away from it. Simon Sinek, a thought leader, not a faith-based thought leader, but brilliant, says they don't have coping mechanisms. He's speaking to young adults, but I believe this is for everyone. We don't turn to a person, we turn to a device, app, or tech. People are often turning these days to, and I think you're doing AI next week, but they're turning to AI for mental health and other things, which I would just say we turn to people. Again, what does the church have to offer? As many other things as people. So we set daily time limits. We use screen time apps. And I love in this word blob, the fitness word. My worry is as tech takes over more and more of our time, what falls off our life? And exercise is one of the first. And as a therapist, one of the most protective things in your life is exercise. It's movement. But that kind of falls off. Two left. One is sleep. Now, we say we value sleep, but do we? Like if we actually looked each night, like I have many clients who say they value sleep, but they're up binge watching things into the wee hours of the morning. They say roughly 30% of teens say that they've been awoken at night by a call, a text, or a notification. Jonathan Haidt says in one of his books, social media steals the time we should be sleeping, and then it makes us feel inadequate when we wake up. So some remedies. Number one, have a digital curfew. This is for all of us. Now, sleep hygiene is an interesting term. Some of you might know the name Andrew Huberman. Andrew Huberman is a neuroscientist. He's a Christian guy, as a side note, but he's a big, famous podcaster. He says this idea, and I don't know if it's him or someone who was on the podcast, 10, 3, 2, 1. 10 hours before bed, no caffeine. 3 hours before bed, no food. 2 hours before bed, no liquids. But here's the hardest. 1 hour before bed, no blue light. Now, for some of us, it's, I would say, maybe we got to not have the phone be the last thing we see at night and the first thing we see in the morning. What are some rituals we can change? I now turn off my phone and read a physical book before bed every night. Just something that can kind of calm myself. And in the morning, I have a couple little routines that I do before I ever look at my phone. And as a side note, I think we need to look at caffeine. I'm at a talk a number of, about a year and a bit ago, and a young teenage girl walks up to me, and she waits till everyone's gone, then she walks up and says, "So I struggle with anxiety," and you can see her hands shaking a bit. And she says, "So my church says I'm demonized." And I'm like, okay, another conversation there. And then she says, "And my mom and doctor are putting me on mental health medications tomorrow." And I'm like, I'm so sorry. It's 8 o'clock at night. She's cradling a Venti Starbucks coffee cup in her hand. And I'm just like, it's a decaf, right? She says, no. I said, how many coffees do you drink a day? And she looks up and to the left. So if you ask me how many a day, two. Every day of my life, that's just how I am. She says, two. And in my head, I'm like, how many coffees do you drink? And then she says, and I hate to say this number out loud, she says, I have either six or seven. If you're in a room full of teenagers, they will all do this weird six, seven thing. But I live by the principle of Occam's razor. Occam's razor is this: the simplest answer is usually the answer. I'm like, stop drinking seven coffees a day. You're a therapist. You're not supposed to tell people not to do things. I'm like, stop drinking seven. Like, let's cut it down to one or two. Guess what? She's completely fine. And just recognize the importance of sleep. You ever gotten home late from a vacation, late from a function, and tried to have morning time with Jesus? You can barely keep your eyes awake. Like, sleep's the foundation of everything. And we start there. And lastly is one that worries a lot of us. It's this decrease of social skills. Now, as a speaker, I'm supposed to use really short quotes. I have two pages. It's the most profound quote in my research on social media so far. Social media doesn't make Gen Z afraid to miss out. It makes us want to miss out. We want to avoid the risk, the rejection, the awkwardness, the effort and energy that the real world demands. Our major problem isn't the fear of missing out, FOMO. It's the fear of taking part. It's the first time I've read what I believe many of us are seeing. We've left FOMO. We're now in this. People just don't even go out anymore. I'm at a talk in September, and a mom said to me, my teenage daughter, other than coming to church for 1 hour each Sunday morning, never left the house for the entire summer. Look at how many young people are scared of doing everyday things. I don't just mean the fear of learning to drive. Side note, we've gone from 96 to 98% of us getting our license when we're 18 to 42% of people in Ontario. And parents, this is fear-based parenting, right? This is what happens when we talk about being scared to drive, and then it kind of comes through to our kids. Or getting a job, or ordering in restaurants, can't walk into a cafe, don't want to open their door for a delivery. One British TikToker hosts a series called Doing Things You're Afraid Of to Show You It's Okay, where she films herself facing challenges like getting into an elevator, asking for help in a supermarket, and asking for directions. Meanwhile, forums like Social Anxiety on Reddit, which has over 400,000 members, is filled with teens and young adults admitting that they're afraid of the real world and they feel much more comfortable online. I think we all play a role in this. As parents, as leaders, as churches, like, we all need to begin to look at this conversation. So the remedy for decreased social skills, in-person activities. If we have a choice of being online or in person. Like, we need more and more in person. Number two is limiting screen time. I love the comic. It says, well, what if we don't change at all and something magical just happens? Like, you're going to actually have to do this. Every day of your life, like, it's set your intention for the day. Years ago, John Maxwell, the author, wrote a book called Today Matters. And it's just each morning you get up and how am I going to do in all of these things? And at the end of the day, you ask yourself, how did I do in these things? But like, if you want to decrease screen time, it doesn't just happen. And grow your life skills. We are seeing with the overfunctioning adults in the home, a lot of underfunctioning students who then head off to college, university, and are struggling. So how do we grow life skills? Both as you as students and we as adults, how do we work on all these things? There's so much here. This is just a cursory look as we look at it, but I'll just say these are all the things I talked about with a bunch of the remedies. And over the next few years, my research is to help find really good resources for this. And then I post on my website all of these things. So just some overall thoughts for social media. Number one, decrease smartphone use by 1 hour a day. research has actually shown by doing it 1 hour a day, it changes a lot of things. I don't know how far we're going to decrease too, but there's something about the 1 hour a day. And often what they said is exercise is brought back into your life. Number two, you don't need to engage if someone has a different opinion. This is actually not for our students, by the way, it's for us as adults. We're online, someone posts something we disagree with, here's what we do. Swipe. You don't need to engage. You don't have to. You don't need to engage at all. You just follow something else. Number three, turn off as many notifications as possible. For the next upcoming, let's say, month, every time an Apple Watch taps you, every time your phone vibrates, if it dings, we should turn it to vibrate. Every time your notification comes on a laptop, look at it. Was it worth it? Because you just had brain chemistry change. A couple years ago, my watch taps me and I look down and it says, someone who hasn't tweeted in a while, tweet it. So open my phone, right, find Twitter, and notifications, and I turn them all off. But like, you are in charge of your technology. It does not, like, it doesn't just happen. You have a choice to go in and change these things. And number four, follow content specifically so your social media feeds are filled with useful information. If you want to know who you are, by the way, go to TikTok or Instagram and scroll through 20 or 30 videos. That's who you are. Like, if there's 50 videos you see, 5 to 10 of them are going to be advertisements, and you'll just scroll past them. Some of them are trying to send you down a pathway, like you hate football, and it's like crushing tackles, and you scroll past it. The other 40-plus are who you are. I know for me, if I scroll through, I get a lot of English bulldogs. I don't know why. Looking at those make me happy. I love quotes. A lot of quotes. I get a lot of marriage content because I post a lot of marriage and I have a new talk on marriage. And I get a lot of fail blogs as well. I don't know why watching people crash is something I must look at quite a lot, but it's interesting. Be curious. Go look at your feed. So one slide. What's interesting with this is I used to speak on this, and this was the entire talk looking at these things. Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. I will just say, we especially as parents need to get away from this kind of binary, like Christian music good, secular music bad. Like, those things don't make any sense. And not everything Christian is good. Not everything secular is bad. It was a decade ago, a woman came up to me, as mad as I've ever seen someone at me, and she's poking. She's like, you're wrong. There's Christian secular music. And she says, you can't tell me a single secular song that's not evil. And I'm like, oh, challenge accepted. How about happy birthday? And I watched someone, I thought her head was going to explode. Like, she was furious with me and then walked away. If me saying happy birthday blows up your worldview, you might need to work on your worldview. I do think we have kind of praise and worship music, which is often just soft rock. We have in the middle a whole bunch of, there's artists who are faith-based and not, who sing about love, marriage, relationships, many things. And then there's music we might not listen to. But when we say Christian good, secular bad, we create blind, non-discerning people where we don't think anymore. But I wanted to say this for this entire topic. I'm speaking at a church retreat. We're going up to a camp. I forget which camp. It was Muskoka Woods, Mineo, your pioneer. Anyways, up we go for the weekend. But the week before, I said to the youth pastor, can you write everyone? I don't know how you do it. Can you write them all and ask this question? Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. On the Saturday night, I want to do something fun. Ask how many people will give me their phones. And I want to plug it into the data projector. And we're going to go to like YouTube and see what your wall is. We're going to go onto your Spotify, your Apple Music. We're going to go, you know, scroll through your TikTok and see what it's offering you. Anybody want to guess out of 125 people, how many said yes? Anybody?
Zero.
None. Including the youth pastor and his wife. They had an adult leadership team. None of them. This was youth and young adults. They had a youth and young adult leadership team. None of them. And none of the youth and young adults. There is a disconnect between what we say and claim and how we live out our lives. If I can't right now hand you my phone and say, here, there's a problem. This is how simple I think this discussion should be. If I can't hand you my phone, why? What is the disconnect between what we claim and sing? I think in worship, this is easy. This is hard with our lives. God, I give you my technology. I give you all these other things. It opens up an interesting discussion for us in our own lives to think about that. I do think there's a progression as well. I just say to parents, if our kids can't show responsibility in the little things, how will they show responsibility in the big things? And kids will want technology very, very quickly. So I just think like kids should be making their own lunches very quickly, getting up for school on their own. These are things that kids can do because technology will come. And if they are being bullied or if things like sexting or addictive behaviors arrive, we want to be able to be those people our kids can come to. As a side note, if kids come to us with the little things and we explode, they will never come to us with the big things. And people ask, well, when should we get a phone? When should my kids get a phone? I'll be upfront. I believe the wait to eight campaign. Someone said 8 years of age. No, wait to grade eight. My daughter got hers in grade eight. My son got his in grade seven. My son was a AA baseball player, and we needed contact. And so that was kind of why he did it. But are we actually talking about a phone? Like, no one is saying, can I get a device that makes phone calls? Like, they're asking, it's become the new rite of passage. There's a new book by Jean Twenge, and she says we should actually pair getting your license with getting a phone. And I'm like, that's an interesting thought, but I think it's a little late. And I think our kids often have our old technology first. You know, I got my iPhone 11 years ago. My daughter was using my iPhone 7, right, just on Wi-Fi at home. Are they mature enough? Have we talked about sexting and bullying and all of these things? We do not just hand a phone to someone. You know, if they do get a phone, what are the house rules? Do you have house rules, even for us as adults? And who's buying the phone? Phones are expensive. I'm at a talk, and a father comes up to me. He says, I got a question for you. Am I an idiot? I want an answer of yes or no. I'm like, okay, this is unorthodox. Let's go. He says, so I bought my kindergarten kid. And in my head, I'm like, idiot. He goes, I bought my kindergarten kid, 3 years ago, bought my kindergarten kid an iPhone 13 Pro Max with a full package from Rogers. Idiot or not? I'm like, yeah. I said, can you let me ask you a question and not just call you a name? He's like, yeah. I said, why? He said, what if they need to call me? Parents, fear-based parenting is the parenting of the day. If they need to call you, every single teacher administrator around has a phone. Some conclusion, some resources, and we're done. People still want to know how much screen time a day. And I'll let you know, in our house, we didn't do that. We used the rocks analogy. I'm assuming some of you have heard of this before. You have a jar of life. In it, you're going to put big rocks, little rocks, and sand. Big rocks matter. This is my big rocks that we've used in my house. Big rocks are your faith practices, your school or work, family time, daily physical activity, all of these things. And you can add in more. The big rocks go in first, like the jar on the right. The small rocks could be done today or tomorrow. I can grocery shop today or tomorrow. The sand is all social media, all sports. I'm a Bills fan, but if I'm going to watch a game today, I have to have all the things in my life. Like, I can't just be watching sports all day and the other rocks don't make it. I love this. I love it because this is not just for technology. This is a way to live for the rest of your life, making sure. And this is, you might have to also think of what are your big rocks and think through this. But I think for all of us, we must take ownership of our own jar. And parents, we must help model and live this out for our younger kids as well. Three big tech tips. This is really interesting. If your phone is out of arm's reach, you'll use it 40% less, 40%. When I'm at home, my son or daughter, when she's home, will actually take their phones and throw it onto the chair next to them, so I'll sit on it when I sit down. Because you know, the moment you're bored, we look at a phone. And what I like is, if your phone's not with you, you might have to engage with the person near you, or it's okay just to sit for a minute. The other one is, if it's face down, you use it another 20% less. We're at 60% reduction by two very simple things. Number two, give yourself permission to not follow what everyone else is doing. I am at a talk, and up comes a grade 9 girl and struggling with anxiety. And she just said, I don't know what to do. I can't sleep at night. I'm like, how come? She says, well, I have a huge friend group in high school. 15 to 20 girls is her friend group. I'm like, wow, that's big. She says, a lot of my friends stay up really late, and so I have to reply to them. To hear language, though, I have to reply. And then she says a bunch don't sleep well. They wake up in the middle of the night and they text me. And so my phone dings and I wake up and I text them back. I have to, she said. And then she said a really funny line. She said, and a lot of my friend group are swimmers. If you have anyone who swims, my neighbor's up at 4:30 a.m. And so she said, they're texting me. She said, I just text all night and I'm not sleeping. I said, do your friends know you struggle with anxiety? She said, yeah. I said, what if you tell them, listen, I love you guys, but I have to turn off my phone at 9 and I'll turn it on at 7. And if I don't reply, just know I need to get some sleep. She said, but what if, as a therapist, I'm always like, let's play the what if game through. And so she went to her friends, and a few weeks later, I'm at another talk, and guess who shows up? She does. I'm like, hey, how How's it going? She said, well, you won't believe it. My entire friend group now turns off their phone at 9 o'clock and turns it on at 7 in the morning. We don't have to follow what everyone else does. This goes for us as adults as well. And I say again, you can't know what you need to work on if you don't know what the issue is. So use your screen time app. Because you can look, if you're on a Kindle app and reading a lot, that's okay. But it might be different if it's Instagram or on Disney Plus or something else. Some resources and we're done. My website is 1,600 links. I am a curator, a collector of the best content I can find. And so I'm often just saying, here is a book, here is a sermon, here's a TED Talk, here's a resource. All of my socials are at the very top with the Amazon A in the middle. And if you just wait, the panels will move over and you will see this one, the Media Navigating Everything Take Home. I do have this talk in a small group course. You can also use this with a family with questions. Does your church have Right Now Media, by the way? Nope. So I have both my parenting and Men Navigating Everything talk online as courses, and I think I still have it on YouTube. My wife will always be like, well, the Men Navigating Everything is great for women. And I'll always say, hun, I am never doing a talk called Women Navigating Everything by Brett Ullman. Like the mansplaining that would happen in an hour talk like that. But you could learn something from it. And I've recently filmed my talk on marriage, which is just as a therapist who's a faith-based person, having my Christian couples into me, just seeing what they're dealing with. This is kind of my response to that. I would encourage all of you to read. There's so many great books here. Choose one, any of them. And they're all on that Amazon A. Two slides left. Throughout COVID, I finished a 3-year journey. Realizing people aren't reading, I created a handbook. This is 7 books in one. It is daunting. But the first 7 chapters are for parents themselves. And then the last 9 chapters are for all of us, for your middle school kids through high school and beyond. And this is mental health, culture, all these other things. There's a study guide. I read my own book as an Audible as well. And we just finished with the same thing we talked about earlier, is what you're currently doing helping support the life you're working towards? If you are, wonderful. If not, we make some changes. And I think, I just say this, you can do this, right? There is hope in all of this. There's many of us doing quite well with technology. And 2 thoughts as we close. There's a book called The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath. And they just say this, your life, your faith, I would add in today, your discussion on media is built on moments. And today is just a moment. And lastly, John Maxwell, the leadership guy, he says this, when you are challenged by anyone ever, choose one thing. What is one thing I said this morning? And you're like, that's for me. But then he says the hardest thing, you only have 3 days to do something about it. So today's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, by Wednesday night, he says, if you haven't made a single move forward, you will not. And the goal of today and the goal of this whole sermon series on this is that we begin thinking about, as faith-based people, how do we connect our ancient faith with our modern world in this conversation of technology. After some more songs, I'll be out the back if you want to chat. I also answer all my own messages. Thank you so much for having me out. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye.